This week on the BOAG World Meetup, we discuss remote working, finding meaning in your job, and the terror of preparing a presentation. This episode of the BOAG World Show is sponsored by Frontify and AdSkills. World Show. This season of the show is a series of virtual meetups of web professionals, well, professionals in the loosest sense of the word, recorded live in front of a studio audience, well, not really a studio audience,
in front and of people who are attending,
Paul. Yeah, and with drop-in guests. However, this week, as always, as you've already heard, is Marcus Lillington. He's always joining me. He's a consistent in it all. Hello, Marcus.
Yes. A constant, even, maybe.
Yes.
Although I quite like being a consistant. It's like you're a band member. Paul BOAG and the Consistents.
Yeah, no, that works. Yeah, definitely. Definitely, I'm good for that. So, yes, just let's explain the premise of this season. Essentially, we're going to try and recreate the idea of a meetup, right? Because that's the one thing I love about the web industry is, especially in the past, is it's true today, actually. There are so many meetups and there are so many conferences and people come together and they share their problems. They have a good old moan about clients and we just kind of hang out together and spend a bit of time together. But I know it's not always easy for people to go to these things. Many people, as Katie has already said, live in the middle of nowhere, like I do myself. Or alternatively, you might not know of meetups in your area. Conferences can be expensive. So I thought, well, let's try and create a little meetup where we could get everybody together and we could talk. Christian Hellman's in the room as well. Wow.
Hey, royalties arrived. Jeremy and Chris.
Are they not like us? That they're secretly the has-beens. That had their moment, and then the crown has passed on to other people. I don't know.
Yeah, other people. We don't even know who they are anymore.
So Andrew wants to know whether we're going to be paying for virtual drinks. There is a bar open that you can find at your local off license, and you can buy your own drinks.
I should have tea today because I'm not feeling very well.
You're always not feeling very well.
You're always not feeling very well, Mr. BOAG. And I'm normally fine. But I've had a cold since the middle of December, and I thought it had gone away for about a week, and it came back yesterday evening. And I'm really... If I start... Oh, thank you, Michelle. So at least someone's being sympathetic.
Yeah, well, whatever. We don't really care about that. So the idea is that in the room you can chat as much as you want to, introduce yourself to one another, that kind of stuff. We're also going to get you... on the show as much as possible, as many people as we can. But the one kind of bit of housekeeping before we go, if you want to know when we're recording these live, if you're listening to the recording of this rather than the live event, you want to know when they're happening, you can go to subscribe.boagworld.com/community. And that will let you sign up and get notifications, which is why we've got so many people in today, which is good.
But before we get the first guest on, we need to do a sponsor slot. You can't have meetups without sponsors. It's just the way it is. And our sponsor for today is ExpressVPN. We probably all know about VPNs already, and I certainly run one, and you should too. It's great for privacy and security. But there are other advantages to having a great VPN like ExpressVPN, which is you can binge watch TV in whatever country you want. We don't need to be constrained by a geography anymore. So let's say, for example, you wanted to watch Doctor Who, right? You could easily, if you were in the States or Australia or anywhere else, you could easily connect to the UK and therefore access Netflix in the UK, and you could watch as much Doctor Who as you so wished. Personally, I find myself occasionally connecting to the US so that I can access certain shows that I really enjoy there. So It is an absolutely superb service. Whether you want to watch Japanese anime or whether you want to watch the latest series on Hulu, BBC iPlayer, YouTube, name it, you can use any country you want. It hides your IP address and lets you control where sites think you are located. And you can choose for something like 100 different countries, which is also, by the way, very good when it comes to testing geographical personalization that we often do on our websites. If you want to see what your website looks like for people coming from a particular country, you can use ExpressVPN to do that as well. There are just so many benefits, aren't there? It's ridiculously fast. It's really quick to set up. There is just no buffering or lag at all. You can stream HD TV, no problems at all. It's also compatible with all your devices, phone, media console, smart TV, the lot. And so you can watch things on the go or on the big screen, whatever you want to do. If you visit my special link right now, which is expressvpn.com/BOAG, BOAG World, you'll get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. So you can show your support for the show, you can watch what you want, and you can protect yourself by going to expressvpn.com/BOAG World. expressvpn.com/BOAG World.
Should we get somebody on the show? Who should we get on first, Marcus? Who you pick?
It's got to be Jeremy.
You got to be Jeremy. All right, let me invite Jeremy. I've got
to get someone with a bit of class on to start it off because it'll only go downhill from then onwards, no doubt.
Are you saying that Jeremy is the classiest guy we have in the room? Is that what we're saying now?
He's probably the most experienced. There you go.
He's the greyest, probably.
Oh, I don't know. Look at me.
I don't know. Jeremy looks pretty grey. Hello, Jeremy.
Yay. Hello, Paul. Hello, Marcus.
We can compare our grayness.
Yeah, I think I might have you beat, Marcus.
There was one conference I saw advertised on Twitter, and it was a series of pictures, and Jeremy was one of the speakers. And it was actually Jeremy was the only man. There was a lineup of female speakers. And I nearly tweeted, I resisted the temptation to tweet, it's good to see that ghosts are being represented in diversity lineups. Because he just looked so pale in the photograph that it would just really made me giggle. I'm sorry, Jeremy, I haven't spoken to you for ages and now I'm just being rude to you.
I am very pale. I mean, I'm Irish. What do you expect? So now the hair matches the skin.
Yeah. So how are you? What are you up to these days?
I am very well, thank you. I'm currently chatting to you.
Oh, see, that's useless, isn't it? That's what I've come to expect. Is that the Clear Left offices you're in?
Yes, I'm in the Clear Left studio at my desk. I might have to shoot off for a meeting in a while, but yeah,
no, it's all right.
Fairly quiet day here today. Some people in working away.
So what kind of work are you doing these days? Because you don't seem to be speaking at conferences quite as much as you were at one stage, or am I imagining that? Just you don't go on about it as much.
you might be imagining it. It was a fairly busy year in 2019. Yeah. And I do have some things lined up for 2020. In fact, that's what I'm currently working on. I'm using this time while it's kind of quiet at the beginning of the year to try and get a new talk together.
So what are you going to be talking on? Give us a preview of what your in subject is at the moment.
Well, currently I'm scribbling things down onto paper because that's how it all starts. And I'm not sure yet what the subject will be. So here's the thing. So what I'm preparing is this. I'm committed to speaking at an event apart later in the year.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And last year at an event apart, I was kind of given a more clearer brief by Jeffrey and Eric, which was, you should talk about service workers. You've written a book about service workers going offline. Do the talk of the book. It would be a code talk, right? Practical thing. I was like, okay, I'll give it a go. And did it and turned out well and got good feedback and it was all fine. But it's not really what I do, right? Practical, you know, stuff you can actually take back to work and use in your everyday job. So I kind of prefer doing the pretentious, philosophical, highfalutin stuff.
That's what we all know you for, Jeremy.
Indeed, exactly. And I feel like that's where my heart really lies. So I'm at the moment, I'm not tied to this, but I'm sort of looking at a fairly pretentious highfalutin topic. Well, no, here's my code name title so far. It's called Assumption Junction, and that the talk would be about assumptions.
Okay.
And obviously, in the world of front end, there's plenty to talk about there, right?
Yeah.
In terms of the assumptions we make about people's devices, their browsers, their network speeds, all of that. Obviously, I'd be talking about progressive enhancement without actually using the words progressive enhancement, right? I'd be talking mm-hmm. about accessibility without necessarily mentioning mm-hmm. accessibility. It's the web. But that topic of assumptions is something that would also potentially cover things like research and UX and any areas where kind of part of your job is to uncover the assumptions and question assumptions and turn assumptions into hypotheses and test them. So it's all very vague right now, but you asked.
It sounds in danger of being quite practical, mine. I'm sorry, Jeremy, but... You know, actually,
well, okay.
That's good advice.
Well, there's you can get good advice that's on the level of, oh, now I'm going to think about something differently, right?
Right.
You've received good advice, and now you're going to see things in a different way.
Uh-huh.
You're
going to
observe interactions or things differently. And that tends to be the kind of stuff, too. Now, that's different to the practical advice, as in download this tool or use this code.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, do things in this particular way. That's practical.
Yeah.
That's more useful in the short term. And I tend to not give that useful practical advice. I give the more big picture practical. Can something be big picture and practical? Isn't that kind of a contradiction?
Well, I think, is it not? I think it's the difference between, my attitude is tools come and go.
Right.
Frameworks, whatever. But the underlying mindset is a fairly consistent thing. And I think the more you progress in your career, the more you move past worrying about whether you're using X platform or Y platform or the cool, you know, the latest design trend or whatever else. It becomes more about how you think about things and how you problem solve. So it is practical, but in a more intellectual way.
Yeah, and that's very much where I come from. Now, having said that, with an event apart specifically, I can't really get up on stage and only give the big picture stuff. I can't get up and give what they do an hour long talk.
Yeah.
So I can't stand there for an hour and talk about big picture philosophical stuff. People who paid money, they need something that they can take home and use in the short term as well as the long term. So that's also the challenge with putting the talk together is where do I fit the practical stuff in with the big picture stuff. So yeah. If you look back at some of the talks I've been given in recent years, I've found they've evolved a kind of structure where they tend to start big picture and high level. They might in the middle dive down into some practical stuff and then come back out of there and finish big picture and high level. And the trick then is make it all work in a narrative structure that sounds cohesive and doesn't just sound like here's a three-part talk, you know, big picture, practical picture. That's the challenge.
So, Ben, I'll let you go in a minute because I don't want to, you know, this isn't, you were just dropping in, so I don't want to take too much time. But Ben in the chat room was saying he's always fascinated by how people prepare their talks, and I agree with him. How do you go about doing your talks? So you've got this bit of paper in front of you at the moment.
Yes.
Then what happens?
Right. So I actually blogged this. I'll see if I can fish out the blog post and I'll paste it into the chat. And I will point out there's what I say I do and the advice I give to other people when they're preparing talks. And then there's the reality of what I actually do. But I will describe the theoretical approach I take. So, yes, this I've got an A3 sheet of paper in front of me and a pen. And where it all starts is with, let's call it a mind map, although that's a very highfalutin term for these scribbles on a piece of paper. Point is here is you've got ideas in your head. You don't know if they'll connect. Not everything will survive to the final talk, but the point is they're all in your head, and that's not good. So you need to get them out of your head and down onto something. Now, I used to do was I'd open up a text file, and I'd dump all my ideas in there, and I would tell myself they're in no particular order. But because it's a text file, it reads top to bottom, they're automatically in an order. Mm-hmm. So by taking a nice big sheet of paper, it adds an extra dimension, and you can literally have disconnected things. They're just scattered all over the place. Now these things are down onto the paper. You can start to maybe draw connections or not. It might be too soon to do that. The next level is usually maybe grouping things, categorizing them. So, for instance, in this case, I realize I've got, you know, design principles potentially in here. Okay, what can be categorized under design principles? Or maybe I've got practical takeaways. What can I categorize? You know, it doesn't matter what the categories are. But you get them down into something, maybe post-it notes, maybe bits of card, where you've got some kind of shorthand that you understand what it means. That could be one single word. It could be a phrase. It could be a doodle. Doesn't matter. It only needs to make sense to you. Now you've got all these bits, post-it notes, scraps. You can set yourself the task of expanding on each scrap. So maybe each scrap is going to be a couple of sentences. Just what do you mean by this doodle? What do you mean by this scrap? To write down a few sentences. Again, this could be pen on paper. This could now at this point be files on a computer, text files.
Yeah.
But you're building up a kind of a toolbox of all these paragraphs of things that might end up in the talk or might not. And the nice thing about doing it this way is that you've, at this point, you've broken down this overwhelming task that was crippling you, which was, I have to prepare a talk, into lots of tiny little things, which is, well, actually, by the end of today, I want to have expanded in three of these post-it notes into a few paragraphs or, you know, some paragraphs. So that's kind of nice. It stops you panicking about the big picture thing, and you can just focus on the little thing. And then when you've got this collection of scraps of paper, text files, whatever, now you can start thinking about arranging them. You start to get into the structural part. The nice thing here is that you could have multiple approaches. You could say, okay, well, I'll take the obvious one, which is I'll do a chronological order of these things. See how that works? Maybe that works fine. Or you try and do something interesting. I ran a workshop on narrative structure where I was saying, I gave people cards where they got a random card with something like flashback on it. And it said, you must find the sort of high point of the action and begin with that and then work your way back to explain how you ended up there. So point is that structure is now separate from the material. So you can have the same material and try different structures. And say, yeah, that's pretty good. Oh, this was good. And if it doesn't work, you're not back to square one.
No.
You're back to square, you know, three or four, maybe. But you don't go all the way back to the drawing board. And then when you find the structure you think is working, then you can start to go into higher fidelity. And that would be getting into the territory of a slide deck and actually, you know, designing thing. And at that point, now you're into a completely separate part of the process, which is the prep, the actual polishing of slides, practicing the presentation, all of that. So I like to break them down. See, it's kind of gone through three phases, I guess. The raw materials, what the subject matter is, and organizing that in some way. Well, actually, no, the second part is the organizing. The second part is the narrative structure. You've got your raw materials. How are they going to connect together? How do they flow? It's a very challenging part. And then the third part is presentation. How will you actually say these things?
Yeah,
And I think it's good to have those separate. So you're not trying to juggle those three things at once, like, this presentation part isn't working. And also this narrative structure is not quite right. And I'm not even sure this is what I want to be saying, right? These are three things that, like, solve one problem, then solve the other, then solve the third one is the theoretical way I prepare talks. Now, the actual...
I was going to say, because you were at that point, you were making me feel quite inadequate. That's so logical and so thought through. And I'm going, I don't do it like that. Yeah,
I'm actually, at the moment, I've got the A3 sheet of paper and I'm kind of procrastinating.
Doodling.
I am doodling and I am procrastinating, but I'm going to own the procrastination. This is something that Chris Murphy talked about before, which is that there's good procrastination and bad procrastination.
Yeah.
The bad procrastination is where you literally leave everything to the last minute. Right? It's the night before the exam and you haven't studied. And the last minute you start studying for the exam. That's no good. But a better form of procrastination is where months ahead of time, you you begin. You start the thing you're supposed to be doing. In my case, a talk, whatever. You make a start, and then you stop.
Yeah.
And you start procrastinating. And then you'll find loads of other things to do. Like, I, personally speaking, you know, my house is never tidier than when I've got a talk to prepare.
Right? Absolutely.
My desk is pristine once I've, like, got something I'm supposed to be doing. You'll find all these things, these ways of not doing the thing you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
But because you've made a start in it, you're also kind of receptive in a kind of almost like sponge state. And I find this, like, I'll be listening to a podcast that's completely unrelated, or so I thought, to the topic of the talk. And I'll hear something, or I'll be watching TV and I'll spot something. Wait a minute. Oh, I think I could use that, or that connects, or that's given me an idea, or, right? So you're in a different state of mind than if you literally haven't even made a start on it.
Yeah.
You're kind of open to these connections. And maybe you do end up still doing everything at the last minute, right? You finally get the slide deck together 2 days before the event or something, but you've kind of been working on it the whole time, just not in a very efficient, practical way.
Yeah.
You're
absolutely right. Yeah. Go on, Marcus.
I've always said that, because as you know, I write a lot of boring documents. But all I need to do is create the document, give it a name. and I'm 20% of the way there on the journey. If before it had the name, zero. Mm. It exists. And therefore, I am now able to continue that journey in a much more comfortable manner. So it's
everything after that is just an implementation detail.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, Jeremy, I'll let you go for now. But, I mean, pop in any time. We're going to be doing these regularly for the whole season. So any time that you've got a few minutes to spare, feel free to drop in and we'll talk about something else completely random.
Well, I've got no time to spare because I'm working on this talk. And that's basically
why I'm here. You are currently procrastinating, as Jessica Hitch calls it, doesn't she?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope it goes well, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Okay, so that was Jeremy Keith. It's lovely of him to drop in. Should we just keep going? I guess this kind of having people on the mic might work. Christian, are you available still to have a chat, or have you got other things to go on to? Because you said you might have a meeting later. While we're waiting for Christian to reply.
Another 5 minutes.
All right. Quick, get him on. Well, we can. Oh, dear. I've done it wrong. I'm panicking now in an attempt to get him on. Right.
Button pull.
Oh, so many buttons. There we go. So Christian's coming on because I haven't spoken to Christian for flipping ages. I'm very conscious that there are a lot of people in the chat room that are regularly in Slack. And I do want to get them on the show over the season. The reason that I'm inviting Jeremy and Christian on first is because I haven't spoken to them for ages while I speak to the people in Slack every day. So I'm using this as an opportunity to catch up with people. Hey, it's Chris. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hello, Chris.
So what's going on in your world these days? I mean, it's been so long since we've spoken. I don't know where you're working or what you're doing or anything.
I just had my 5th year anniversary at Java, at Microsoft, and I'm the principal program manager for the developer tools there.
Okay.
So basically talking everything about developer tools inside the new Chromium-based browser and how it interacts with Visual Studio Code and how it actually allows people to build things easier and accessible. So the meeting in 10 minutes is about an accessibility review of the developer tools itself, because one of the first things we did was make them keyboard accessible and screen reader accessible, because they'd never been before. So now we actually had some testers and we're going through that one at the moment. So it's an interesting concept to move from talking about tools to actually building them. And I thought it was a natural thing to get into a product manager role there rather than just developing the things, because I've been developing for 20 years and there's better people out there and more hungry people and more interesting people to build these things. But the guidance for them not having to sit in meetings is a good thing to move into.
Yeah. I mean, that was a huge move on Microsoft part to move across to Chromium. How did that come about? Were you involved in that in any way?
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, I worked on the Edge browser before, and we realized that there was, while it makes sense to offer another browser and have our own engine, we realized that every developer out there is basically building for Chrome, and they made their choice. And we realized it's a tough job to actually make that happen and get people to test on it, because it wasn't available on Mac, for example, as well. Mm-hmm. So we thought, how do we make that happen? Do we rewrite our own engine to be available on Mac as well? Or do we just join the Chromium project? Because the big problem that I saw personally with the Chromium project was that it's the open source project that runs the web, more or less. Like, it runs all the browsers out there. Visual Studio Code is based on it. Most of Node is based on it. Most of Electron apps are based on it. And it didn't have many outside contributors other than one company. And that was the danger there. So joining a open source project with like our amount of engineers and actually having not only one company control it made a lot of sense. So I was very excited about that happening. So, and I was scared of it. I was wondering if it's going to happen or not, or if it's going to be easy. And we quite nailed it. It was quite, now on the 15th, it's going to be the official release. Not fully, everybody has forced to upgrade to it, but it now will be available on all Windows 10 machines, and it will be available through Windows Update. And I'm excited about that, because one of the big things that I found interesting as well is that dealing with other companies on the Chromium project, the first thing when I got the promotion into a principal program manager was like, oh, you should be with the team. And my team is in Redmond in America. Okay. And I didn't want to move to America. So I was like, what do I do? But it turns out that a lot of the open source projects that are based on Chromium are actually scattered all over Europe as well. So I'm working with the team, with the Google team in Munich and with the Visual Studio Code team in Zurich. So I got a lot of like benefits of being in the same time zone as them, and also talking to the team in India where we do a lot of the accessibility and Mac work. So the time zone thing really works for me, being in the middle of the two, but it means that my day just started an hour ago and ends at midnight.
Oh.
So that's the weird thing about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd be that keen on that, if I'm honest. Yeah. Although better that way round. I'd prefer being late. Yeah, a late start than an early one. Oh, but that's, you're a morning person, aren't you? So, yeah.
I think the biggest problem is like when mates invite you to go to the pub, and I'm like, well, I'm just in meeting three or four today.
Yeah.
So, again, the interesting thing was that me complaining a lot about this, they put me into a role of now talking about making sure that the company has better processes of including remote people. Mm. So I'm actually in charge now to actually bring up products and ideas and protocols, how to actually make remote work happen much better than it is before. Because with a company with 127,000 people, it's kind of tough to let everybody work from home. And it kind of makes sense to be in the office. But at the same time, we can learn so much from what we've done, than what I've done in Yahoo, or what I've done in Mozilla, where we always worked remote. So, and I think it's a challenge that every company is taking on this year. There was somebody else wrote a blog post that this is the year of the remote work. And I think it makes sense, because, I mean, I don't want to be stuck in traffic going to the office every morning. It makes so much more sense to be at home.
Yeah. Do you think it's still hard to get that level of collaboration mind within teams when you are all working remotely from one another? Because ultimately it's better all to be in the same room, isn't it? It's a balancing act. Because I'm a great fan of remote working. I've been doing it for 17 years or something. But
well, three of us are all sat here at home.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so.
One main issue is that in order to achieve more diversity and inclusion, it's actually a very good thing to consider for companies, because yes, it's better if you sit in one room, but it's also then same people in one mindset in one room. You go to the office and you're at work, and other people just basically start their day, others just finish their day. So a lot of things that are important to one part is not as important to the other, because they have to pick up their children from school or something like that.
Yeah.
So it helps in terms of getting ideas across better. What it also I like about it a lot is that it actually forces you to document more. It forces you that every meeting needs to have an agenda that's getting filled out as the meeting progresses. And then if next morning you wake up and the meeting at midnight that you couldn't attend has a transcript, then I basically didn't miss out on something. And that also means that everybody becomes more effective, because if you write things down, you actually realize that you don't just go into the meeting to hang out for the day in the meeting room and eat donuts. You just go there for a reason, and you get out of it for a reason as well. So I found that we cut down our meeting times and our meeting annoyances in the company a lot by actually getting remote people like me involved and making sure that these meetings are much more organized.
Yeah, no, that's that is very true. I agree with that more. And Dan makes an excellent point that when you're working at home and you're in meetings, you don't have to share the biscuits, which is a bonus. So there's that.
Yeah, but you always have to get the crumbs out of your keyboard. That's the bigger problem then.
Yeah, very good. Very good point. Well, Christian, I'm very conscious that you've got your next meeting to go to. So, we're going to continue the conversation about remote working, because Andrew Miller has said that he's got some stuff to share, so I'd like to talk to him. Maybe you could pop back another time and talk to us a little bit more about Edge, because I would love to hear some more about what's going on there and that side of things. But for now, thank you very much. It's good to talk
Absolutely.
To you.
Absolutely. Right, see you soon.
Right, let's get Andrew on. I see I've done it again. I need to get more slick at this. I'm always pressing the wrong button, you see. That's my trouble. Andrew, here we go.
I'm going to have to go and get some biscuits. All this talk of biscuits.
I know, right? Now I'm desperate.
I've got some, but they're sort of that way.
They're out of reach. Well, wait until we start talking with Andrew, and at that point you could sneak off and grab yourself biscuits. Yeah.
Yes, they're really nice ones as well.
I know. This is working really well. I'm quite pleased with the way that this is going so far. It feels all very natural and very kind of organic.
Having a bit of a chat, yeah.
So
Andrew did say earlier that he wasn't sure whether he'd actually be able to talk, but.
Perhaps he's gonna turn down my invitation. We shall see. Apparently he's on screen, but I can't hear him.
He's running down the hallway, isn't he, to find an empty room.
Oh, right. We're waiting for Andrew to reconnect. So in the meantime, while he's doing that and trying to, he clicked something and now doesn't know what he's clicked. Oh, Andrew, I'll give you another invite. Oh, I'm going to remove your invite and give you another one. This is slick, this bit. Right.
Yeah, it must make excellent podcast listening.
It does.
This is just the waffle in between.
Yeah,
bear
absolutely.
With us, folks.
We normally have waffle in between. I've got all these questions that people have submitted that I was going to talk about as well.
We've got 14 more episodes after this.
I know. I'm not in a hurry. Hey, I know what I can do. While we're waiting for Andrew to come on, we will do a sponsor.
So usually our sponsors want you to buy something, but this particular sponsor has a free gift for you. It's a free book. If you've ever run Facebook ads before, then you're likely already aware of what custom audiences are and what retargeting means. Well, our sponsor today is adskills.com, and the founder, Justin Brooks, wrote a book that has 7 retargeting recipes inside. These recipes are a step-by-step ad campaign that has been proven to work. If you haven't heard of AdSkills yet, I would be surprised, as they have over 11,000 customers. They are the paid training used by Frank Kern, Grant Cardone, Ryan Deese, Russell Brunson, and Agora, as well as many others. They have printed out 1,000 copies of this book to give away. Just go to adskills.com and it's right there at the top of the page. The only catch is the mailman doesn't work for free, so there's a small shipping charge to get the book delivered to your door. Go now to adskills.com. There is a lot more about them than just that free book, so it's worth a visit.
Andrew, hello, sir. It's been a while since I've spoken to you as well. How are you doing?
Not bad at all. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. So you're opinionated on remote working. I didn't know that. Is that a particular bugbear of yours?
No, I wouldn't have said I was opinionated, but I quite like to do it a bit more, but just in the kind of industry that we have a kind of culture of everybody needs to be in the building and everybody needs to be in the same room. And we started to kind of try and split teams away, but it's how you keep them engaged a bit more so that you're not losing contact with them. I quite like to let people work from home more, but how do you keep the accountability of getting stuff done and making sure that people are responsible? And I think as an industry, we're kind of needing to mature a wee bit more. So I was kind of interested in what other people do and how they get around about it.
Do you think that we're way ahead compared to most industries?
I mean, in higher education rather than...
You're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. Claire in the chat room has just let it know, in higher education we suck. Yeah. Well, she didn't quite say that.
I think we've come a long way, and I think, you know, the technology is coming, but I think there's a kind of age range of people that just, if you're not in the building, then you're not really doing the work. So
I mean, that's hard. Yeah, that's a cultural issue, isn't it? And I think the only way you can overcome that is by experimenting with it, trying it out and seeing what the productivity is for it, and have some kind of metrics that you can measure. It's pretty much like anything, isn't it? Even when you're designing a website, you've kind of got to go, you know, you're trying to convince stakeholders to do something that they're not, they don't want you to do on the website. And you say, well, let's have a trial period and we'll gather some data. And it's the same flipping principle, isn't it, really? Mm. Go on, Marcus. What were you going to say?
I'm a huge fan of mixing it up. I at Headscape, we always do 2 days in the office where we're all together. Mm. Sometimes more than that, but usually two a week, which kind of allows 2 for home and 1 for going to meetings or whatever in London or whatever I need to be doing. But I just find that mixture is ideal because you get, I think it is valuable to be able to talk to each other and to bat ideas around a meeting table. I think you do get stuff done that is more difficult, let's put it that way, over things like Slack and the like. But equally, I find that I don't get much done in the office. I get a lot of ideas. I do a lot of ideas happen, but I can't kind of nail myself down to kind of really work on that document I was talking about earlier, to finish it off, do the other 80%. To continue what Paul was saying, if you're going to do an experiment, maybe just do the kind of 1 or 2 days at home a week, or everyone has Friday at home. I don't know. I think that's quite a common thing. I don't know.
In an ideal world, I think we would probably flip it on its head. At the moment, the presumption is that you should be in the office. That's the default. But actually, I would be tempted, you know, if I was God of the world, to change it the other way around and say, look, by default, people work at home, but there are certain things where you need to be collaborative and you need to work together. So, for example, I recently got approached.
That's nice.
I got recently approached by a client in Dubai that wanted me to do a customer journey mapping workshop. And, you know, obviously me flying out to Dubai is not exactly cheap. So I was trying to think whether there are ways of doing that remotely. And I kind of got it to work in principle, but it wasn't as good and it felt like a bodge. And also, the other thing I always worry about is, it is when you're working remotely and you're not with various people, you get that problem of you're not working across silos. It's very easy to fall into that habit of just throwing it over the wall to the next person. Oh, I've done my design bit. Now I can pass it off to the developer. Well, if you're sitting right next to the developer, then there's more kinds of collaboration going on with that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's a tricky one, and getting people, it's a cultural thing. I just think it's going to change with time. As Bob puts it, we need to kill off everyone over 30 and then it wouldn't be a problem. But I am slightly concerned.
I might have an issue with that now.
Yeah, I think we all might have an issue with that.
Yeah, right. I'm heading towards double 30.
Yeah. Crikey.
Oh, hang on a minute. It's not a big birthday for you, is it, this year, Paul? No, you're...
I'm still a few years behind you. Andrew, you were going to say something.
Sorry.
I mean, I was saying that we've worked with an agency based in London, and we've worked remotely and we've worked over Slack and GitLabs and, you know, Hangouts. And actually, it's been really good. And we have a better relationship with them, where we're separated by all these hundreds of miles, than we do with some of our colleagues just down the other end of the corridor. So, you know, I think it's to do with the kind of relationship you have with people and how they can work with each other. So, and I think the technology, I mean, we have a lot of people still on desktops that are kind of tied to their desk, and, you know, they don't want to actually have a a machine at home that's a business machine. They don't want to do that. So it's I think it is a cultural thing that will take time, and we're getting there, but it's slow in some respects.
Aslan's saying that the policy at his company is that they don't have a policy. It's just basically something that you kind of agree on an ad hoc basis with your line manager as is required. And I quite like that, really.
Yeah, I mean, we do that. I mean, we do work from home at times, but sometimes we just have to be in the office as well.
That depends on the kind of thinking behind that. If the thinking behind it is along the lines of, you can take as much holiday as you like.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, you know, it's, if that means that we want you to feel bad, so you'll only take 10 days a year instead of 25 or whatever, then yeah. Oh yes, of course you can work from home. No one else does. You know, that's what I'm thinking.
You should feel bad for being different. So, anyway, yeah. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm sure we'll see you pretty much every week, knowing you. Do you actually work?
Sometimes. Do you do anything? I just come in and hurl insults and then go away again. That's my kind of...
That's your thing. Drive-by insulter. Well, we'll hold you accountable next week. Nobody's insulted. Everybody in the chat room needs to insult you, as you're the one on camera at the moment. But
they all left when I came in. I noticed about three or four people kind of up and left. So,
oh, he's not famous.
Oh dear, never mind. Andrew.
Neither you or me are famous either. Internet famous, Paul Berg.
I am obviously of a different tier to you two. And mainly because I have the power to do this. I've just closed Andrew out. I've chucked him out. Didn't even say goodbye. That's how arrogant and rude I am. I know I'm a nasty man.
Nasty man.
So
I was doing, my tongue was firmly in my cheek, Dan, who says, let's not do the famous tag. None of us are famous.
Oh, yeah. That was Dan obviously hasn't been in our chat room or not. We often joke about all the bullshit that goes around that. Absolutely. Do you know what? Can I have one more person on the show? Aslan, are you happy to jump on the mic for a bit? Because I'm really interested in the new place that you work. Because, just so you know, I'm going to give Aslan an invite so that I'm actually prepared. This time, and then I'll explain why I want to get Aslan on while he connects. So I've just sent you an invite, Aslan. Now, Aslan works for Just Giving, which are a brilliant organization that makes it really easy for people to fundraise for charities that they like and that kind of stuff. Now, I've just been through the loop of signing up for Just Giving as a charity, because there's a charity that I run, and so we wanted to get on Just Giving. And it's come such a long way, that site, since I last looked at it. It was a pleasure to use, and so I'm just a little bit interested to kind of find out a little bit what's going on behind the scenes at Just Giving, really. But, it's a really great tool. And it shows off very well how websites kind of evolve over time. It's changed so much. Hello, Aslan. How are you doing, mate?
Hello.
Hey, dude.
All right, Marcus.
Hey, dude. What's this suddenly? Well, Aslan has always been a bit of a cool dude, isn't he,
exactly.
Really?
Yeah. No, although I'm quite sad that I didn't note how much, even more Christian Harman looks like Robert Plant. He's kind of older now. And for all the young people in the room, that's the lead singer of Led Zeppelin.
There you go.
He really does look like him.
Anyway, I'm sure he's actually styled himself accordingly. So Aslan, tell us, how long have you been at Just Giving now?
Oh, about 5 months now. So,
oh, right. Yeah, so still quite new then. Right.
Yes, still haven't gotten out of my probation period.
Oh, dear. So you must be really careful what we say, right? Isn't Just Giving wonderful? I imagine it's such a lovely place to work, isn't it, Aslan?
Well, you know, in all honesty, it is. It really is. So when I was looking to go there, I wasn't specifically looking to go to Just Giving. I was interviewing for a number of places. And I've reached that point in my life where I just decided that, you know what, work is great. I enjoy what I do, but I need to get a better work-life balance. And, the amount of money that I was taking home, provided I didn't take less, it was enough to be comfortable. So it wasn't about the money. It was about going to a place that I felt comfortable with, that I felt was going to be a good place to work. I could enjoy it, and I could go home every day and be proud of the work that I do and know that actually I am making a difference. Because one of the reasons that I started down the front end side of things was because I could, at the end of the day, see, hey, I've written some code and I can visually see it there, the effect of what I'd done, as opposed to back end where it's like, hey, I've made an array of data, which the back end engineers, I do know they get quite excited about how performant that is and that process, but that doesn't really do it for me. I like to go, hey, look at all these really lovely animations and how accessible this is, and that's what does it for me. So that's why I went down the front end route, and I have that satisfaction at the end of the day. But as I've progressed, I wanted satisfaction from being able to say that actually the work that I do is benefiting people and it's making people's lives easier with what they're doing. And there is a task that somebody has come to the site to achieve, and let's find out how we can make that really simple for them to achieve what they want to do, because ultimately that's going to help with the business goals as well. So there was that. And then throw in the fact that that Just Giving works with charities, and and the thing that you're then trying to help achieve is that the charities get donations, or that a crowdfunding page gets donations and raises money for social good, is the term that we use at Blackboard and Just Giving, and actually that becomes even more so. And then you add on top of that that actually Blackboard, who own Just Giving, and Just Giving have this attitude within the company that they actually want to give back to the community all the time. So I shared a thing on LinkedIn where the Blackboard head office over Christmas, or just before Christmas, every single Blackboard office across the world had had a drive where all the employees were donating a toy, and it was Toys for Tots. And there were photos of the foyer of the head office in Charleston, and it was absolutely incredible. There was a row of children's bicycles about 100 meters long, amongst many other things. And these were all being then given out to kids that obviously were going to struggle over the Christmas period. So there is this incredible attitude there that not only are we're doing the work, and sure, let's get this straight. We aren't a not-for-profit company. We do have to pay bills, and we do have to pay all the engineers and everything. So yeah, there is money that needs to exchange hands there. But at the same time, we're still are in a place where we're giving back to the community and doing what we can to help out. So yeah, that's why I made that choice.
And I totally get it. And what I love about, you know, like you say, you know, Just Giving and its parent company, they are a for-profit company. They're not a charity in their own right. But that doesn't mean it's not all for-profit companies are inherently evil. You know, that you can do a huge amount of good being a for-profit company. And I find that very satisfying, even in my own little company, that, you know, most of the time I'm solving first world problems, you know, making something a little less annoying, like you were saying, which is hugely satisfying, but that wouldn't be enough for me. The fact that I can, you know, make profit as a company, and then I can plow some of that profit back into community activities. You know, I have on my desk here, I have a little picture of a lad, one of the lads, the charity that I support. And every time I'm working on a shitty project, every time I'm going, oh, I've got to deal with that client again, I look down at this little lad on my desk and go, okay, if I put up with this shitty client, I get to give you know, help him in his education. And so that kind of helps motivate you, I think, in some ways, having that bigger picture. So, yeah, it's really good. Thank you for coming on to talk about that. Aslan, I'm sure we'll get you back on again, because I'd like to know more about how Just Giving works, but it feels like that's a different topic for a different time. So we'll get into that another time. All right.
Cool.
Bye.
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 So I was polite with Aslan and I didn't just hang up on him willy nilly.
Yeah, I mean, he's nice. Andrew.
Yeah, exactly. There are a lot of people in the room that are resonating that idea of, you know, you get to a certain point in your career where it's not about the money anymore. You know, once you earn a certain amount, it stops being your motivator, and it's not even that big an amount. You know, I think, you know, satisfaction is, work satisfaction is so much more important. And I think employers should do better at noticing and paying attention to that. I think there's a lot of organizations which could attract some really good staff, even if they count off the top salaries, because they're providing some kind of social good and making people's lives feel worthwhile. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. Okay, let's talk about our second sponsor. Yeah, okay. I think, who knows where we're at? I'm kind of making this up as I go.
I'm quite enjoying this, Paul, though.
I am as well. It's a bit scary because you've got no idea what's going to happen, you know.
We have crazy people coming into the room.
Well, I'm not worried about that, but you know, you don't know what you're talking about. I got Aslan on and the conversation went in a completely different direction than I expected it to, but that's cool. It's kind of nice.
It's meant to be a chat.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's the whole idea.
Yeah. So our second sponsor is Frontify. And Frontify have supported the show before and I've worked with them before. And I'll come on to that in a minute, but let me just explain what they are very briefly. They're an all-in-one brand management platform, right? Sounds very confusing and pretentious. Actually, it's incredibly useful. We all have this kind of assortment of different stuff, don't we? We have our brand collateral. We have imagery. We have logos. We have design systems. We have, you know, brochures and publishing stuff, all of that kind of stuff. And this provides you a place to keep all of that stuff. So it's got a brand portal, a digital asset management system, a system specifically for design systems. So, you know, if you've got design systems, which I'm a huge fan of and I talk about a lot, then Frontify is a great place to keep those all synced and up to date. And it's also got a place where you can put all of your web and print publishing material. So it basically lets you ensure consistency across everything you're doing as an organization. Make sure that you're working more efficiently. You're not spending hours trying to find that image that you saw on something at once, you know? And it also allows you to involve other people in the creation and evolution of these brand assets. And that I think is particularly important for things like a design system. But while maintaining some kind of oversight, so it's not complete chaos. So like I said, I worked with them before and I've actually written an ebook for them that you can download from their website, which is about how to, practically kind of create this kind of digital governance that surrounds a tool like this. So you can go and download that for free, by going to frontify.com and going into the resources section. You can find it in there, a load other great resources that they've got. The other thing I would say about them is they do have a free package for startups and freelancers. So if you don't have like loads of people, so if it's just you and your client, for example, you can put all your brand assets that you're producing on a particular project. Maybe, for example, you're creating them a new brand identity or a design system. You can upload them to Frontify, share them with your client absolutely for free, which is a bonus. So there you go. That is a little bit about Frontify, and you might want to check them out. Cool. Okay. I want to try one question. Do you think we could do one question?
Go on then. Whose question is it?
Okay. This is a question from, well, we might as well just do the first on the list, mightn't I? This is a question.
Is it Dave Smith from London?
No, this is a real question. And by the way, people can submit questions anytime they want. Just drop me an email to paul@boagworld.com. Okay. You can tell that this is a real person because they're not called Dave or Jim or some British name that came to the front of my mind. This person is called Noah, right?
Okay, so, yes, all right, I'll give you that. You would not have come up with that in a million years.
Yeah, exactly. But but interestingly, do you know what? Noah is the most popular boy's name in the UK for 2019.
Really? There you go.
Apparently, wow. According to some website I stumbled across.
Dave in the chat room says, that's actually my name and I live in London. Dave.
So Noah's a digital marketer and he says, there seems to be so much conflicting advice about generating traffic to our websites. Some say that we should be using pay-per-click. Others say that we should be using SEO. And so others argue for content marketing. Which approach is best? Right.
Depends.
Of course it does. Yeah. But I'm really interested. If anybody's got any opinions on this in the chat room, please let me know. And just pop them in chat and we'll read them back. But yeah, you're right, Marcus. Of course it depends.
I think if you do or you sell something that's really, really niche, then surely pay-per-click's got to be fantastic. But if you're doing web design, then it's probably not so great, for example.
Yes. Yeah. I think it would be pointless, for example, you using pay-per-click for Headscape, for example.
SEO, well, surely that's good. SEO is just something that you should be doing anyway. Depends what you mean by SEO, isn't it?
And also, he then goes on to say others still argue that content is content marketing. Actually, SEO and content marketing are pretty much the same thing these days. I guess rather than sitting here and pulling apart Paul Noah's question, right.
Yes. My apologies, Noah.
It's all right.
Most famous name, most popular name of 2019.
Apparently.
Is that in the UK or the world or US or
I don't know. I wasn't paying that much attention. So my advice, right, before you worry about what channels to use, map your customer journey. If you map your customer journey, right, and out of that, you can create, you'll know the different questions people have, the different tasks they have, and the different touch points they use, whether they're using the website, social media, you know, whatever, in order to get to your content. Then you can create a sales funnel or an engagement funnel around that, which kind of, we start building up campaigns and calls to action. And that's when you can start going, okay, well, because people are asking these questions and they're, you know, looking in these places, then this type of marketing is appropriate, whether that be pay-per-click or whether it be SEO or whatever else. So that makes a big difference. I've got two articles, on that subject that you can, check out. One is, on my website, there's an article about customer journey mapping. So you can just Google customer journey mapping on my website or search, should I say. And then the second one is on sales funnels. And again, just go to my website and type in sales funnels, into the search and you'll get that back. So yeah, it's quite a good question, man. I quite like it, but nobody in the chat room has had anything to say on that subject whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's a bit too marketing maybe for our crowd.
Maybe.
I don't know. But anyway, send me questions.
More.
paul@boagworld.com. Also, I meant to say right at the beginning of this session that if you're in the chat room and you're struggling with any particular thing at the moment, maybe earlier just in this meeting, there was just before this call, you had some issue that you were struggling with. You could have put that as a question, but I forgot to say it. I'll try and remember next time. I think that's good. That's a good show. Can we call that a good show?
I think we can. It's a little bit loose in places, but it's a new format and we're learning it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I like it. Oh, lovely show. Thank you, Claire. It's lovely that you're here. You have to come on, Claire Gibbons.
To be fair, Claire only turned up halfway through the show.
Oh, she said to her, maybe.
Yeah. Big commitment there. Marcus. We may be changing the format of the show, but we can't not have a joke from you.
Well, I've got a joke from Aslan.
Oh, really?
Which is kind of appropriate. And it's also kind of Christmassy related, which, and we've only just had Christmas. So this is the joke. What do you give a man who has everything?
Mm-hmm. What do you give a man that has everything?
Antibiotics.
I don't get it.
Oh, come on. If he's got every disease.
Oh,
he has everything.
Yeah, no.
Do you want another one?
Yeah. Although I'm now leaning quite heavily towards Dave's attitude towards it, which is each guest should bring a joke and we just get the guests to do it, because that was
excellent
pretty
idea.
Dire.
It wasn't dire. That was a good joke.
Anybody? Well, Marcus is going to tell another joke now. But if anybody else has got, if anyone else has got a joke that they want to give, then we can get you on camera to give it. Right. Has anybody got, cause everybody's very quick to say, jokes, you know, and be mean about Marcus's joke, but it's hard to tell them. Go on, Marcus, you do another one.
What do you do if you see a spaceman?
What do you do if you see a spaceman?
Park in it, man.
Oh, they got it in the chat room. I think Bob is putting his hands up that he's got a joke for us. So I'm going to take him up on that. I think that's what he was doing with his thumbs up, but we'll see. While Bob is either refusing my invitation or panicking hugely because he doesn't actually have a joke. I will remind people to submit any questions or problems or ideas that we can talk about on the show to paul@boagwar.com. Also, I would encourage you to cite. No, he didn't have a joke. He was backed out at the last minute.
That's a classic joke, that one. I can't remember how it starts. To do with the Swiss flag. We'll do it next week.
Okay. Swiss. Right. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. That's fine. So, yeah, submit questions you'd like us to talk about on the show. If you like the sound of the show in the chat room or to come on camera, and you can do that by going to subscribe.boagworld.com/community and join in the conversation for the rest of the week as well. In between shows, we have daily conversations pretty much like this at boagworld.com/slacking, and you can join our Slack channel. But for now, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.
Holy crap.